The League of Legends betting podcast is brought to you by my patrons at patreon.com/gelatilol. There you can find bonus content like in-depth articles on macro trend analysis and league previews, as well as thoughts on breaking news and the podcast picks before the show is released to platforms. You also get to support your creators more directly. patreon.com/gelatilol. That's G-E-L-A-T-I-L-O-L. Good evening, everybody. It's currently a little bit after midnight. Actually, it's about 12:30 a.m. Eastern. On Saturday, March 23rd, we're a couple hours away from the LPL and LCK slate for Saturday morning, both those leagues finishing up the regular season. I just wanted to do, we're going to do this as a mostly as a recap show, and then I'm going to touch on Saturday's LEC slate because I already did the LCS for tomorrow on yesterday's LCS show, part two of yesterday's podcast. Today is just going to be, this show specifically is just going to be LEC and the recap from Friday. So let's take a look at what we had on Friday. Overall for the day, we ended up down minus 0.848 units. LCS actually saved us with Liquid taking care of business. I'm going to touch on that in just a little bit. LCK, we lost both kill total overs. The second one didn't get there by the hook, so we ended up losing both. That kept us in the red for the day, or we would have been even. Dodged a few bullets in the LPL. I'll touch on that in just a second. The LEC, we were down short. Which actually wasn't all that bad, considering we ended up losing the stake on SK, which we'll also touch on in just a second. Overall, not too bad a day. Could have been a lot worse, but missed out on some opportunities that I thought were golden. Unfortunately, didn't get there. But, you know, for a day where you take big shots and it doesn't hit, it always feels bad, but it's much better than being way down, like way red. So we had a couple of our nice positions that actually hit today, so that's good. First up, we'll touch on the LCK. Wasn't too crazy. Genji steamrolled Brionne, as you'd expect. I don't really have any commentary on that series. Fyrex versus Nongshim. I was very close to taking Fyrex in this series, and they dominated game one. And game two, it looked like they were dominating too. They were up like 7,400 gold at like 27 minutes or so, which is like, you know, that's substantial still. It's not insurmountable, but it's substantial enough. That's like, we're talking like 3% outcome here, like sub 3% win rate from that position. They got way overconfident after a Baron. They took Baron and just got, they decided to opt into a fight, got way overconfident about it. And, Nongshim were able to pick up a team fight win and ended up eventually taking this game. Would have been an absolute tilter. Game three, absolute marathon slugfest. It was like a 40-minute game. But Nongshim had the Zeri Lulu hyper carry set up. And that was going to be tough to deal with because Fyrex didn't really have a great way to lock it down. If I had backed Fyrex in this, this would have been an unbelievably tilting loss. But I didn't, so... And, you know, it's a good thing that they were already eliminated from playoffs before this game, because if this is how they got themselves eliminated from playoffs, that would have been, like, soul-crushing for them. So I guess it's a good thing they were already eliminated, because that would have been tragic if they didn't get there. So somehow did not get these overs home in this series. LPL, RNG with the 2-0 upset over FunPlus. First game of this series, I absolutely loved FunPlus's composition. They had a small lead, which is... excellent if you're playing like a Senna-based team, as long as you're not against a Smolder or any other hyper carry, and they weren't. Well, they were against the Jinx, but was it against Jinx? I forget if they were against Jinx. I'm pretty sure they were against the Jinx in this game, but I could be misremembering. Anyway, I like their setup a lot, but they were very, very sloppy in... They just kind of like dilly-dallied around in mid-game. Like a lot of these like mid, like ARAM-style dances that were happening around Vision in the side bushes in the mid lane... setting up for dragons and stuff. Their front line would step forward to clear wards and just leave their back line there to just get flanked. And I give credit to RNG. This was probably the best series that RNG played this season. I give credit to them because they saw the windows and actually attacked the windows for a change. And that's something that they've been struggling with this season. But FPX just gave them wide open looks to just murder Doc Dom on Senna, and Senna can't protect herself. So you just leave the back line open. Yeah, of course they're going to murder her, and that's what happened. Second game in this series, I don't honestly remember all that much. I'm pretty sure it was just a clean RNG win. Let me find my notes here 1 second. I literally lost track where I was at my notes just now. Yeah, this is a pretty lopsided win for RNG in map 2. Yeah, so this was probably RNG's best match of the season. just like quickly running through the VOD. It's the best they've looked all year. They actually capitalized on mistakes from their opponent, which is something they've been struggling with a lot. They've had a problem pulling the trigger on things, and it was good to see them do that. It's a little bit too little too late for them. They can't make the playoffs at this point, but they might be a play against LGD next week. We'll keep that on in the back of our minds for, I think that's Tuesday they play. FPX, man, oh man. I think, unfortunately, this team might not be as good as we thought. The past couple of matches have been terrible, terrible looks. Now, I think it's possible that they're just taking their foot off the gas because they already clinched playoffs. Maybe they don't want to show anything. Usually with new teams, that's not the case. Usually they try hard all the way through. So I think there's a more likely chance, I think, that this team is just not as good as we thought. You know, they do a lot of things well, but they are very clearly at this point not an elite team. They might just be yet another inconsistent good team like a handful of these other ones in the LPL are. Unfortunately, we are left with just three elite teams in the LPL, which sucks as, you know, viewers for a product here. But, you know, you got to call a spade a spade. Anyway, Thunder Talk versus Top. Game one of this series was looking like it was going to be a Top Esports blowout. They had like a five-figure gold lead in the first 18 minutes of the game. I think they were up like almost 11,000 gold. Like, that's like 0.2%. Like, that, you don't come back from that most of the time. And so Top Esports moved over toward the Baron around like the 19-minute mark or so. And so they're like clearing out vision. They're trying to like pull TT into the river to get a clean fight on them because they're way up, right? They ended up chasing it. I forget who they picked out. I think it was Chocho on Nautilus, if I remember correctly. It was Chocho got Chocho. They tried to pick out Chocho, who was clearing vision in the river bush, and they went after him, and they just kind of dogpiled, and it ended up like walking them into just like a perfect Aphelios way wombo combo, and like two, like half their health bars just got deleted, even with a 10,000 gold advantage. You know, half their health bars just got deleted, and TT actually miraculously won this fight from a 10k deficit, which was absolutely friggin' ridiculous. But they ended up winning this fight with a huge deficit. They ended up flipping that into a Baron. They erased like 7,500 gold worth of this lead in the next couple minutes. But Top were still ahead. Top still had a pretty good composition, and, you know, they won the next fight and won the game off of it. So, like, a little bit of a scare for Top Esports. I know they had that. They had the Fun Plus Game 3 throw. But, like, generally speaking, Top Esports have had pretty damn good macro this season. Like, it's damn close to immaculate. But we've seen a couple instances where that hasn't been the case. Maybe something to keep an eye on. I think this is more just, like, a fluky thing that they walked into. Like, just a lot. It was just, I mean, it's really easy to lose focus when you're up that much. And most of the time, you can just wallet slap your way to a victory anyway. So it's really, really easy to lose focus that much when you're just kind of like in the flow of things. You're not really thinking about it. And they just walked into just a perfect wombo combo. I don't know how often they're ever going to walk into a perfect Aphelios way at the right time situation like that. But, you know, they did this time, and it made this kind of fluky. They still ended up winning. The next game was an absolute shit stomp. So, like, it's weird. Thunder Talk are a really weird team. There's some times where they look so unbelievably bad, and then they have these out of nowhere moments like they did in this game, and it's usually this season it's been UCal Heroics, and they just like they look great in certain moments. If they stopped getting themselves buried in early games, I think they might be an okay team, but that's something they still have to fix. They're a kind of a chippy dog. You can't play with your food against them. They will punish you. They're good enough to do that at least. Thunder Talk, unfortunately for them, they're very, very likely out of playoffs now. Like, they're not mathematically eliminated, but they no longer control their own fate. They have to win their next match. I believe their next match is against, who do they play? They play against FPX. So they could win their next match, but they don't control their own fate anymore. So they're gonna likely gonna have to 2-0, and a bunch of other people are gonna have to like lose out. So I don't know what the exact percentage scenario is for them, but it's not likely, because they're gonna need a lot of help, basically. JDG Weibo, my goodness, am I glad I didn't get involved with this, because I would have been pissed off. This is classic end of season LPL fuckery right here. First game was like more or less dead even for 30 minutes. I thought JDG, both teams kind of had these up-tempo looks, but neither of them were able to get big enough advantages on each other. And then Weibo just ended up, first of all, before I touch on that, I guess I'll just cover that first. And Weibo ended up winning a fight like 30 minutes into the game, just winning the game off of it. Like one, like ace win game. It was like a super low kill, super low action kind of game. Neither team really got more than 1,000 gold lead for like 30 minutes, and that was the end of it. It was cool to see JDG try more up-tempo look. It's not something we've seen too much from them, and I'm glad that they're branching out and trying to add that to their arsenal, because that's not something that they've done a lot of in 2024 so far. I'm sure that they're able to do it. Didn't work out in this instance. It's not like they were crazy outscaled or anything on the other side of this. I was just glad to see them try something different, because I think that's ultimately what's going to make them even better. Game two was just an early Weibo snowball that kind of got out of hand. And I'll be honest with you, we've seen that. We can count on one hand how many times we've seen that this season. You know, just in classic LPL fashion, you get some team that just throws you a curveball right before playoffs start, and now it's like, oh, well, are they actually good now? I don't know. I don't know. I think this was more just like a lack of focus, like kind of checked out series from JDG. I'm not saying they like full punted it, but like after that first game, they just seemed a little off, and Weibo needed this game really badly, and it was a team that was hungry versus a team that wasn't, and you could kind of see that in game two especially. Game one, I think, was coin flip. Could have gone either way, but yeah. Just when you think you have things figured out, Weibo threw you for a loop. I'm going to have to chew on this one for a while. I think it's probably more just a fluky thing than, you know, Weibo have suddenly figured something out, but, you know, when a team shows you something this late in the season after you've been down on them a lot, then it's kind of, it makes you think about things. They have to make playoffs first, so that's not even a surefire thing yet. So, anyway, LEC, oof. Giant X versus Rogue. Got to see the Neela from Patrick, which was pretty cool. A couple really suspect decisions from Finn ended up costing Rogue this game, I thought. It wasn't just his fault, but I think he had like the game-ending mistakes. You know, this team pieces together a few acceptable-looking games, and they give you stuff like this and just eliminate any faith that you had that they're going to get their shit together. We got our 1.5-unit stake on the underhome, though. That was no sweat in this game. So I think these are probably the two worst teams in the league. Giant X, I keep giving the benefit of the doubt to. They have, both these teams have a pulse. They're not pure dumpster fire teams, but they are right on the border. Yeah, so these aren't Brio, and then we're like Nongshim, I guess. BDS versus Fnatic. Should have probably trusted the model and bought the dip on BDS, but you know, I was kind of okay with not being involved in this one. This was a decisive win for BDS. Game was pretty close for about 20 minutes, but they had the Zeri Orianna, and that's really, really brutal scaling to deal with unless you have a way to ignore frontline and access backline, like maybe like Wei or Ziggs or something along those lines, maybe a Bard. But they had a great carry setup, and Fnatic had no good way to deal with it. It wasn't like a super drastic draft difference or anything like that, but you know, and Fnatic had the prior lane, so it was possible that Fnatic would have snowballed this game, but BDS controlled it enough and had the scaling, and this was a pretty clean, good look for BDS. Good to see them getting it back together. Not that they've been bad this season, but this was a good win for them. G2 versus SK Gaming. Broken Blade busting out the White Snow special here. It's not just White Snow. There's a handful of one tricks that play the top lane Bruiser Rek'Sai. This is a solo queue thing. There's a handful of one tricks that are running nuts with this in solo queue. It's a really, really good option if you can outplay the 1v1, and there's certain matchups that it can just dominate. I'm assuming that Cassante is one of them. I am not an expert on Rek'Sai top, so don't quote my word as gospel here. There's a number of one tricks this stream. You can go watch them do it or read their guides and talk about it, but basically the premise with this is if you win the 1v1 and you get ahead, it snowballs so hard because she's like basically not supposed to have items. And when she gets items, she's miserable to gank. She can dive you. She can solo dive you and get away with it. It's like, it turns into this like split push nightmare, almost like a fed Jax or like a fed Urgot or Sins or something like that. Like Yorick, I'm thinking, where it's just a miserable 1v1 matchup. And there's like nothing you can do about it except for call for help, which takes the pressure off the rest of the map. I'm not sure if we're going to see this again. I think it was just a special thing, but if it's good against Cassante, maybe we will see some other people try it. I just wanted to point out, like, Broken Blade, just again showing why I think he's the best Western top laner. He's always bringing out new looks. He plays every role. He can play, it's like he plays every position, plays every style. He always has new champions he's busting out. He has a massive champion pool. And, you know, I don't say it often. I said it a lot during the World Championships, but the additional leverage that he provides G2 in drafts is critical to their success. So, yeah, the actual game, this was just a super clean G2 beatdown, 15-4. You know, it's so funny. G2 doesn't play this cleanly against anyone else, but against SK Gaming, they just always win these games like 15-4, 14-4. They always barely cover the spread. it's like, God damn it. Like, I'm probably going to go back to the well. If we get this playoff matchup, I'm probably going to go back to the well with it again with SK Gaming, because I still think the price was wrong, but it just hasn't gotten home for us. So, yeah. Anyway, G2, really good, turns out. Mad Lions, Heretics. This was a really lopsided stomp from Heretics front to back. Wire-to-wire control of this game. They're starting to piece things together a little bit. Mad Lions, on the other hand, man, I don't know if it's just that they've been figured out, or if they're just, like, they haven't been playing super clean, and they look like there's some kind of a bit of a funk going on here. Bot lane's kind of getting exposed a little bit. It's not just a one lane problem. It's a bunch of different things, but they might be in the process of morphing into a not good team after a really, really exciting winter split. And I don't know if this is just a bad run. I mean, ultimately we've only seen 7 games or whatever from them in spring. Could just be a bad run of variance. Maybe they're playing better behind the scenes. I don't know. But yeah, it's just a really, really weird fall from grace, I guess, for them. But at the same time, Heretics were a team people expected to be good. I thought that they'd be a slow grower, and they've been a slow grower. They haven't been immaculate this season by any means, but they're steadily improving. Speaking of steadily improving, Vitality. Man, are Vitality a stable team? This was another clinical win. Like, this is a near, outside of the kill score, this was a perfect game from Vitality. They gave up no towers, no drakes, all 3 inhibitors. Like, this was a clinical win. It's pretty wild to say that Vitality might be a stable team. I think this is probably more to do with KC not being as good as people think, but this was a good showing from Vitality. So BDS and Vitality stock up, Heretics stock up. SK, I don't really give a downgrade to. Mad Lions stock down. Rogue and Giant X both stock down, I guess. Everybody else treading water. LCS, Team Liquid with the 3-1 win over 100 Thieves. This did not go exactly how I thought it was going to go, but it was pretty close. First game, Impact welcomed Sniper to the big leagues. He just dominated this game. So much of this game was like leveraged off of the stuff that he was doing, like cross maps and everything, just outplaying every situation. Perfect setups, great flanks, everything. I don't want to turn this into a full love fest, but like, and people are going to like bash on him for spending the later 2/3 of his career in the LCS of all leagues. But Impact's been so good for basically a decade now. That's just so impressive to me. Like, I don't care what league you're playing. If you're playing in one of the 4 majors for that long and you're this good the whole time, you're just good. You're just an all-time great. I don't care if it's a lower division or not. That's Impact's done it all. He's incredibly good. And, you know, I was saying to a buddy of mine, like, he just has that clutch gene. You know, I mentioned this in the show yesterday, but like, Impact really does just have a clutch gene. Like, he's just cool as a cucumber when the pressure's on. He plays so much better in playoffs, and when the games matter, it's impressive. Anyway, game 2, 100 Thieves were kind of able to suck Liquid into their kind of scrappy solo queue style game, kind of got the better of them. Felt a little bit to me like Liquid lost focus. I started talking shit after game 1 already. And 100 Thieves shut me up after doing that. I was already breaking out the hate they say I told you so from the hives. And I was maybe a little bit short, a little early to the gun on that. Game 3 was an absolute slobber knocker. This game could have gone either way. 50 kill slobber knocker. So 100 Thieves had the Vhagar in this game. I love the concept of Vhagar, especially in the LCS, where, you know, I don't know if teams are necessarily always going to be able to outplay it. I also like the idea of Vhagar into Smolder. It's another infinite scaling champion. Not quite as good a scaler as Vhagar or as Smolder, obviously. But I like the concept of being able to baby cage something, just nuke the front line, and then just like make the fight a lopsided fight immediately. I love that concept because Smolder needs front line. Very, very cool idea. I think Liquid took advantage of a few transitional mistakes from 100 Thieves. 100 Thieves have started to kind of, this is kind of a habit, something to monitor. I want to keep an eye on it moving forward to see if they fix it. 100 Thieves make a lot of mistakes, like, in transition when they're repositioning to establish vision in a new location. So, like, for example, if you're setting up like for a dragon fight. It's like the minute before a dragon fight. You're trying to get mid prior, you're trying to move your vision into, as a team, you're trying to move and acquire vision on the entrances to the Bot River for Dragon Pit. This could be anywhere. I'm just using this as an example. They make a lot of mistakes getting caught out establishing that vision, or not being on the same page with each other when they're establishing that vision. And I think this is mostly a communication between the top and bottom parts of the map, because it's a lot of the time it's on the support and the top laner to get this done, and the jungler. Not as much so on the carries. They make a lot of mistakes in setting those kind of situations up, and they got picked out a couple times. It looked like there were a couple instances in this game where Liquid just... Once there was vision established in a spot, they just dipped and went somewhere else, and then they would catch 100 Thieves out of position. They did that like two or three times in this game, and that's the last one that they did it on ultimately won them the game. It's a very small and nuanced thing, but it's something that I've seen a couple times with 100 Thieves, and if it becomes a recurring problem, that's going to be something that, if they don't fix that, that's going to be an issue for them longer term. Maybe not against everybody in the LCS, because I don't necessarily trust everyone in the LCS to poke this kind of, you know, pick on this kind of thing. But if games are going longer because these LCS teams just can't seem to close quickly, that's the most important thing when you're playing these late game scenarios, is like being on the same page as everybody. And if they're not on the same page as everyone, then that's going to be something teams can pick on late. And if teams are just going to be like, oh, well, let's just not fight 100 Thieves early, let's not play their game, let's just scale, and they'll eventually fuck up at some point, that's something people are going to be able to take advantage of, and 100 Thieves are going to have to remedy that. Game 4 was a decent start from 100 Thieves, but I think Liquid outfought the team fight in like the team fights in the mid game scenarios and the skirmishes that happened. They turned the corner pretty quickly in this one. That's not something they're usually good at either, but they, you know, once they took hold of this game, it was just over. Other than punting that second game, kind of getting drawn into the 100 Thieves solo queue madness, Liquid looked really good today. It's not always sexy. They grind out games. And the thing is, though, they know who they are. They're not trying to be something they're not. And in North America, that's a good thing. They remind me a lot of the FlyQuest team from a few years ago that ended up going to Worlds. And, you know, maybe they're not quite as versatile as that team was, but they're not pretending to be something they're not, which I appreciate. And you could say the same thing about 100 Thieves, I guess. But, you know, I don't think this team's going to win a world championship. I don't think they're even going to win a domestic title or anything, but... You know, they're going to be reliable if they can kind of settle into this. I still think AP is a liability. He was a liability a few times in this series. But this team is playing significantly better with Umpty and Impact in the top side of the map than they were last season. And if they're playing, like, the main problem Liquid had last season was that they would explode early games and just didn't know how to close a game out. This team, it's kind of the opposite. Like, they don't necessarily blow early games out often, but they play a lot better in the mid and late game. They do a really good job communicating and moving as a team and establishing vision as a team. So, you know, they have their flaws for sure. I'm not saying they're going to win the league or anything, but Liquid continuing to improve is good for the overall quality of the LCS, so that's a good thing. All right, moving on to the LEC for Saturday afternoon in the East anyway. We have week 3, day 2. First matchup on the slate. I may be doing these out of order, I forget. SK Gaming plus 229 on the money line, plus Fnatic, or versus Fnatic, minus 291 on the money line. Just completely stumbled over that one. Fnatic 11-6 straight up as favorites, SK 4-6 as dogs. Fnatic 10-14 against kill spread, an average spread of 6.91. SK Gaming 9-6 against the kill spread with an average spread of plus 5.6. This should probably come as a surprise to nobody. I am going back to the well with SK Gaming here. This is too big a price. Model makes this plus 159, Fnatic minus 196. I think that's probably about right. Maybe give a bump to SK for a choice here. I just think this team is better than the market thinks they are. They just are. I know we lost on this bet yesterday, but we're going right back to the well with it again. I played SK on the kill spread, plus 8.5 kills at minus 118 for 1.5 units. And SK Gaming Moneyline plus 229 for 0.5 units, a half unit there. This is just too big a number. You know, Fnatic are the better team. I don't think there's any question about that. Fnatic are not as good as G2. And I think this number is just too big. And I think SK are just a lot better than the market seems to think they are. This projects as a very, very high total game. But I kind of mentioned this on the Patreon. These are two teams that kind of get sucked into what the other teams are doing. And so far this season, that's just been these absurd games. So they have a handful of outlier games that are kind of boosting their performance, but these teams will oblige whatever kind of team that they're playing against. If it's going to be a slow, grindy game with not a lot of action, they will both play that way. If it's going to be an action-packed game where it's a barroom brawl, they will be obliged to, you know, they will take care of that. they will join you in that kind of action. I think the two of these teams are probably going to play this a little bit slower, and the totals are adjusted up high enough that, you know, we're getting, like, you know, slightly juiced over 27.5s here. If you just purely look at a projection, yeah, this is probably an overplay. They're both well above league average in combined kills per minute, combined kills per game. I could totally see it. I just have a feeling that we're going to see probably a slower paced game here, especially because neither of these teams can usually blow the game open early. Although, I don't know. That's the fact that so far the recipe on 14.5 has been, if you can't blow the game early, it turns into these like 35, 40 minute bonanza games. And that's kind of why we've been getting these longer, these higher kill totals and everything. So like logically, I can see the case for taking an over. The math says take an over, but the frequency says not, especially for SK. SK go over 27.5 in just a third of their games in 2024. So just keep that in mind. They've had a couple of recently that I think are kind of shading everyone's opinion of this. I could be wrong. I'm okay with that. I just am staying away from it because I haven't been able to. We got the under home yesterday. That was good. But this feels more like an under game, just the way these two teams want to play, like at Bay State. Neither of these teams. These teams are more like they will join the party. They are not hosting the party, if that makes sense. Next up, we have Team Vitality -227 against Giant X +183. Vitality 5-3 is favorites, 4-5 against kill spread. Giant X 5-11 is underdogs, 8-10 against the kill spread. I'll admit that Vitality, I'll jump right to it. Vitality have been playing really, really well. I almost can't believe that, you know, they've been really, really consistent so far in spring. You asked me this a few weeks ago, I would have been like, no way. This team is not to be trusted as this big a favorite. And it almost makes me feel like maybe they're due for a stinker, but you know, it is what it is right now. This team's looking really, really good. They're playing great League of Legends at the moment. Giant Techs are not. So I actually would lean to Vitality here. The kill spread on this is 7.5. Now, the average margin of victory for Vitality is extremely low. It's 5.45. You know, they're just 4-5 against the kill spread with an average spread of 3.25. -3.25 is favorites. So that's not great, and it's kind of going against this, but Giant X have an average margin defeat of 11.21, which is extremely high. That's like high even for like dumpster fire tier teams. So when they lose, they tend to get absolutely smoked. And I think I'm going to take my chances going against Vitality's lower average margin of victory here and just play Vitality -7.5 kills at -114 for one unit. You know, it's a little sketchy because the models liked an under in this too, and I think it's possible that we see that kind of game. But like Giant X have lost so many games, like 20-4, you know, 18-5 kind of games. Like I think this is probably going to be something like that if these two teams are playing anything like what we've been seeing recently. Vitality are literally just like improving, stabilizing. Like we're not seeing the game-to-game volatility that we were seeing with this team and that we kind of expected from this roster. So either they figured something out or they're kind of delivering on the expectations that they had, like talent-wise. You know, I still don't entirely trust this team, but I think this is kind of a combination fate of Giant X and backing of an on-the-upswing Vitality team. I don't actually hate the money line play either on this, but I'm going to take my chances and play this a little more aggressive with the kill spread. Next up, we have Team BDS -140 against Mad Lions Koi +116. BDS 10-3 against the spread, or 10-3 as favorites. Mad Lions 5-7 as underdogs. These are two teams that are trending in opposite directions. I have not been that much of a fan of BDS so far this season, but they had a very, very nice win this season. And if you look at their game grades, they are all steadily improving over the course of the season. So I don't know if this was just like reacclimation after the weird offseason drama or what was going on, but they're starting to piece together and look a lot better. They had probably their best game. Actually, no, they had definitely their best game of the season yesterday. So I think Mad Lions are kind of the opposite. Like they've just been steadily falling off. Their game grades are getting worse. Maybe there will be a point to get a dead cat bounce on this team at some point, but you know, I'm gonna back the Team BDS money line here. I'm kind of front running a little bit. I'll admit that. Like I think this is probably just getting a little ahead of the market, but I think these two teams are trending opposite directions. You're kind of getting a decent price at an intersection for that. For what it's worth, the model made this a little bit shorter and liked a small play on Mad Lions, but qualitatively, I think you have to give a bump to BDS here because I think they've just looked better the last 2 weeks. So I'm playing BDS Moneyline minus 140 for one unit. All right, next up we have Rogue plus 391 against G2 Esports, minus 540. G2 17-3 as favorites. They are 13-15 against the kill spread with an average kill spread of minus 8.35. They are also 12-16 to the under with an average kill total of 27.65. Of note for the play that I'm going to have here. Rogue, 3-10 as dogs, 6-7 against kill spread. Average kill spread as a dog of plus 6.5. Average kill total of 25.4. They go under in 9 out of 13 of their games as underdogs this season. Rogue are struggling. They are not great. You know, I went to bat a couple times at kind of what I was assuming was like the nut low for this team, but they have not bounced off the floor. There is no dead cat bounce happening here yet. I still think there's good enough players on this team to eventually do something, but does anybody want to get in the way of this G2 team right now? I certainly don't. Just for comparison, folks, like, and sometimes I like to do this just for a sense of context, like relativity, you know? SK Gaming, I think we would all agree that SK Gaming are a significantly better team than Rogue. In fact, I believe we can actually take a look at the market price for that because I think we get that match soon. We get SK... So SK Gaming against Rogue tomorrow. SK Gaming are minus 188 favorite. I am almost definitely going to be betting SK Gaming in that game, right? This is the same kill spread that SK was against G2 yesterday. And the money line price is actually not that different either. SK were plus 345. It's 50 cents difference, which is a lot. Or 46 cents difference, which is a lot of implied percentage. But still, SK Gaming are a significantly better team than Rogue. I think we all agree on that. The thing is, in League of Legends, you in a best of one in a map, there's only so much that you can really set a price at. G2 are approaching outlier good levels from a Western team that we haven't seen really since G2 in like 2019. Their underlying numbers are absolutely ridiculous. They look like a top tier Eastern team with their underlying metrics. And the underlying metrics, stuff like Agnostic Economy tends to do a better job than like raw gold per minute and gold differential per minute, because it's not literally adjusted for a region, but it kind of does a better job of adjusting for region because it shows you how much gold they're extracting from the map without kills. And they're a world class team. Just like they were last season. They're actually even better than they were last season. So, you know, I don't want to get in the way of this team. I think they're good. I hate laying kill spreads north of 8 with favorites, unless it's like literally like a lower league team, like an LJL team against an LCK team or something like that. Thing is, like, I actually think we're getting to the point where like books are like they can't really go much worse. They can't really go much higher. Like 9.5, 10.5. Like they're not going to go to 11.5 in a best of one. Like they're. G2, we're getting to the point where if they keep winning, the books are literally just going to make their map price like minus 1,000 against anybody that's not like Fnatic. So, or maybe BDS. And like they can only get so big. There's just going to be a problem pricing that because they are so much better. You know, it's still best of one. There's volatility. And G2 are a team that we know will fiddle fuck around sometimes. So, you know, I think there's a chance that happens here. But to me, there's two ways to play this. You can play a -9.5 on G2, which feels great considering they were -9.5 against SK Gaming. The problem is Rogue tend to not lose that badly. Like their margin of defeat is actually just 8.62, average margin of defeat. So you're kind of up against it there if you wanted to do that. The other angle is to play an under. Rogue have been an under team when they lose. They kind of just roll over and die. They don't put up much of a fight. Their combined kills per game and losses is significantly lower. They're already a combined kills, like very low combined kills per minute team as it is. And they don't pick up a lot of kills in losses either. So, like, they're not contributing to it most of the time. So maybe they have something goofy planned. I think at some point, like, G2 are going to eventually just get bored and play with their food. And I think you're at risk for that playing an under here. But I still played an under 25.5 at plus 107 for one unit. I just think, like, in most G2 steamrollings, it's just going to be an under. Whether it's 20-4 or 18-6 or, you know, 15-5, whatever it happens to be. I think we're going to get a game like that here. So I played an under instead of the kill spread. I think the kill spread is actually not that unreasonable here. I just don't like playing favorite slaying that much unless it's like a literal minor league team. So, yeah, Under 25 and 8 kills, plus 107 for one unit in G2 and Rogue. And last but not least, we have Carmine Corps, plus 141 against Team Heretics, minus 172. Heretics just 4-3 as favorites this season. Carmine Corps 3-8 as dogs. This isn't quite as extreme a scenario as the last match with two teams trending opposite directions, but Heretics are trending up for me. Game grade's steadily improving. I'm still not entirely ready to trust this team, but Carmine Corp are kind of treading water and not improving after it looked like they had maybe made a marked improvement from their, you know, spring season. They are definitely better than they were in spring, but I still don't think this team is good. I think the market's giving them way, way too much respect. The model likes their underlying performance metrics, but like it's not great. Like their low 1600s agnostic economy, they have a pretty large negative differential. Heretics do as well, but if you look at like their last five games or so, Heretics have been a lot better economically. Game grade, they are not actually that much better. The last four, they're actually doing really, really well, but it's not like KC are trending down. They're just not doing, they're not improving at the rate that you would expect them to, that the market is giving them credit for. I don't make this quite as big as this number. The model like to play on Carmine Corp here. I am not going to do that. I would lean to the Heretics kill spread, minus 5.5 kills if you made me play a side in this. The play I do like is over 1.5 Barons at plus 111 for one unit. Heretics go to a second Baron in more than 52% of their games. Carmine Corp in 62.5% of their games. The implied price is like 47.4. Plus, you have macro headwinds working in your favor. Games have been going longer. Overall, there are more Barons per game. We're getting to a second Baron in more than half the games in the LEC now. I think this is a macro angle that you could maybe attack in games that you don't think are going to be a blowout, or games where you don't have a good up-tempo team involved. Neither of these teams are particularly good at up-tempo play, so I like the over 1.5 Barons look quite a bit in this one. That's going to be it for me. I will be back on Saturday afternoon with a preview for the Sunday slate. I will see you then. Good luck.